It's PNFC Daily, Makoti, Murray, LME, and after possibly the worst 45 minutes we've seen in the tournament so far, Argentina came alive in the second half and got the job done with a 2-0 win. Messi on the scoreboard there. Never in doubt, LME, never in doubt at all for this Argentina team.
Never in doubt. Everybody knew it. Now, listen, the first 45 minutes, to your point, it was unrecognizable from Lionel Scaloni's side, to be honest with you. But fair play to Mexico in the first 45 minutes. They were just frustrating them. But you just knew that those legs were not going to last 90 minutes. And obviously in the second half, little by little, step by step, Argentina came in stronger. You can't go 70% when you're trying to block a Lionel Messi shot. You've got to go 100, even if you're going to foul him. And they didn't. Lionel Messi found the hole. Boom. And Enzo Fernandez, my God, his first goal for Argentina was an absolute beauty. 2-0 for Argentina. We'll serve for the South Americans.
Yeah, we'll get to him in just a moment. Even Magic Memo, World Cup edition, Gab, could not stop that strike from Messi.
No, I mean, I think he saw the strike late. I think the strike was a great strike because of the drama and so on. But I think Messi scored, nearly 1,000 goals in his career. I'm guessing this probably, in terms of the technical feat itself, is probably not in the top half. But the scene, the way it came, how quickly he got a shot off, all of that makes it, I think, one of his most memorable goals. By the way, I have some breaking news, because right here on my phone, I had I got a message, and it's a message from my FIFA guys. My FIFA guy, who loves passing me on bits of information. And you know that it's been an issue with attendances in this World Cup. Are they real? Are they not real? And tonight, and I'm just going to read this to you verbatim. I mean, this is really fresh. Breaking news. Tonight's attendance, 88,966, is the highest in FIFA World Cup history. Since when? Let's turn to a little quiz. 88,966. Highest. I'll give you a hint.
Estadio Azteca, 1986.
Sorry?
Estadio Azteca, 1986.
Close. No, there was one more recently than that. Also final.
More recently.
What, the Women's World Cup?
No, not the Women's World Cup.
We're just sticking with men's.
Okay. I'll give you a hint, Kay. Your husband was probably very sad on that day.
Oh, okay.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Oh.
1994, the Rose Bowl final.
Oh.
Italy against Brazil. The highest attendance since then, which to me sounds weird because these stadiums are big, but they don't feel enormous, but I guess they are.
Well, the atmosphere was great today.
Yeah. The atmospheres are wonderful, and we have seen some strange things with the figures, but looking at the screens tonight with the atmosphere from both those sets of fans, I think that's one thing we probably could believe from Gab's sources. Although, Gab, you get FIFA texting you. Jules gets Olivier Giroud. He's like, I just got a text from Giroud, and he told me this. So
yeah, I get mi tía from Lima just complaining.
meanwhile, as well, we've mentioned Messi, but Enzo Fernandez has just put that price tag way up because, by the way, many people were talking about him as a backup for Jude Bellingham if they can't get Jude Bellingham, the likes of Liverpool, Manchester United, Real Madrid, even Barcelona. And now he's just said, okay, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah, his agent is going like this.
it was funny because you know, for him to come on and just take that responsibility, he's 21 years old, let's not forget. And you could say, all right, 1-0 up, worst thing that happens, you know, the ball goes out and whatever, and it's late in the game. But he's got the personality. I mean, we see this, we've seen it week in, week out with Benfica this season. They've been so tremendous with that unbeaten run and whatnot. This kid has so much personality. And I think the Bellingham parallel is an apt one. I'm not going to say, you know, he's on Bellingham's level now or whatever. Obviously, Bellingham's had more time in Europe. But when you see somebody who combines the athleticism with the personality and the intelligence in that role, somebody who also offers you all this work rate, that's pretty special. And I was surprised to see Guido Rodriguez start today, because I feel like I don't really need to see that guy much more ever. And yet, you know, there he is. And this is the thing which struck me the most. And I want to ask you guys what you think, because we made the jokes about Sampaoli, whatever, but none of us really believe. I didn't believe it, right? But then after a game against Argentina, we're against Saudi, where, yeah, you lose. But every metric, if you're into analytics, from expected goals to shots to whatever, suggests that you actually dominated that game. What message does it make when you go and you make 5 changes from that game? How do we explain that?
And there is Luis? The silence. Is that to me going straight away?
That's been questioned. I've seen it questioned. Because I think about it the other way. It, could you say, you can look at the in-game management there, but could you also say, at the end of the day, you're just going to look at the result. Is all forgotten after that Saudi Arabia result with a result like this? Is this the turning point for them? Because there were stages in this game, particularly in the first half, guys, where it looked as though that opening result for them had really knocked their confidence. It's like they were playing scared. They just weren't looking themselves, this Argentina team. And you just wonder if now that's just going to change everything, change the chip. Okay, we've got this and we can get through this, because obviously it's not done yet. The group is actually, it's more complicated than a Facebook relationship status right now. And we'll try and get down to it as it comes in. But I think it could be the turning point, Gab.
Yeah, I agree. Let me just jump in here for a second. The first 45 minutes, I saw something very unrecognizable from Lionel Scaloni's side. But to everybody's point, I think actually it was just the permutations of what would happen after Saudi Arabia. However, I think Scaloni's changes were smart. And he was basically thinking to himself, look, I was just being reactive in the first half. I want to see what Mexico is going to bring. And they had that trio of Herrera and Guardado and Chavez and Alexis Vega just like killing himself for every single ball. And I think at that point, Scaloni said to himself, all right, look, I'm going to start with Guido, because even though he's not going to give me, like, you know, electric highlights, at the very least, he won't completely mess up. Di Maria was switching wings, et cetera, et cetera. And then the 5 changes, I think it was kind of like this Muhammad Ali to George Foreman thing, where it's like, all right, we're just going to let them get tired. Let them keep pressing. And then, boom, we're going to hit them with our brilliance minute by minute, which is kind of what you saw in the second half. So fair play to Scaloni for the changes and the second half. And, of course, as Gab was saying, just, you know, players like Enzo Fernandez showing his absolute magic, and Lionel Messi, of course.
Okay, but then here's the question, right? You start out with 11 players in your first game. You play well and lose, because they did play well. In the second game, and look, this is probably the least talented Mexico team that we've seen in I think, in many years, right? And they go out and they tie you up in knots with the 11 guys you chose for the second game. And then you end up winning with, you know, with goals in the second half of, or the second part of the second half. Who starts the next game? Which, lest we forget, is effectively a must win. Because
it is a must win. They have to win. Yeah.
So how do you feel if you started, I mean, if you started the last game and now you're in this kind of limbo? It just seems strange for what, from the outside to me, looked like such a settled side under Scaloni.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and that's why he's probably getting so stressed on the sidelines as well, because obviously making those changes and not quite going the way he wanted at first. Guys, we're going to have to share these permutations, because everyone's going to get sick of hearing my voice if I do it all on my own. All right, I'll start
all right,
from
let's
the top.
Share it. Go ahead.
You ready? I'll go first, yeah. Then you, LME, and then you, Gab, right?
All right, let's do it.
Argentina. Guaranteed to qualify with a win versus Poland, which would be as group winners. if Saudi Arabia draw or lose. If both Argentina and Saudi Arabia win, top spot will be decided on group goal difference and goals scored, which Argentina currently have the advantage by 2 goals. If the scoring record is identical, Saudi Arabia win the group on head-to-head.
This is like we're back in school. Now you, LME, okay, if Argentina draw against Poland, they are only certain of qualifying if Saudi Arabia also draw. If Argentina draw and Saudi Arabia win, Argentina are out. Saudi Arabia and Poland qualify. Over to you, Gabriele Marcotti.
If Argentina draw and Mexico win by, see what I did there, win by 1 or 2 goals, Argentina finish second and Mexico third. If Mexico win by 3 goals, it will be decided by group goal difference and then goals scored. If records are identical, Argentina finish second on head-to-head. If Mexico win by 4 goals, Mexico are second and Argentina third. Argentina cannot qualify with a defeat.
Everybody
is and then held. The conclusion, summary is lots of permutations. Are you still watching? Are you all
well,
still
I'll tell that? You what, though.
We'll
Mexico.
Keep scrolling. We got more, Kay.
Yeah, we have more, Kay Murray. And we'll
oh,
try
my
to
goodness. I didn't scroll down.
Kay,
Mexico,
it's you. Go.
Continue. All right.
Okay.
Mexico must beat Saudi Arabia to have a chance. If Poland and Mexico win, Mexico finish second. If Poland lose and Mexico win, second place will be decided between Poland and Mexico on group goal difference and goals scored. And Mexico would have to overturn a deficit of 4 goals if records are identical. Second is decided on fair play points. Luis.
I'll tell you what, Gab Marcotti wishes that he was watching the King's Speech instead of this. If Poland-Argentina is a draw, second place will be decided between Argentina on group goal difference and goals scored. Mexico would need to win by 3 goals for second place to be decided on group goal difference and goals scored. If records are identical, Argentina finished second on head-to-head. If Mexico win by 4 or more goals, they would finish second and Argentina third. And credit goes, Gab Marcotti, to
Dale Johnson. Who else?
Look, who else?
I don't want to diss our Polish and Saudi listeners, because I'm sure you guys were able to work out where you stand based on this. But he's got a big piece, which also has you covered there as well. If you want to know more, it's up on the website, ESPN.com.
Love it.
There you go. On the way, and as are so many things, including many articles by Gab Marcotti. So what are your feelings then, guys, going forward about this? Who do you think may have the edge now? Does anybody, do you have a feeling one way or the other as to who's going to qualify from the group? You'd say Poland for sure right now.
I think the group is staying where it is, Kay. Maybe Argentina might go first and then Poland second. But I think Saudi Arabia is going to prove to be a tougher test for Mexico than we may think, as we have seen already. And I think that I wanted Mexico out of this group. I was very confident about it. But I think in the end, it's going to be Poland and Argentina.
Yeah, but then it's that risk-taking at the end now, isn't it, Gab? It's one of those where, you know, you don't want to take any risks in case the other game goes against you.
Well, obviously, these games will be played at the same time. I guarantee you there's obviously going to be somebody sitting on the bench. I mean, Luis, back me up on this. Those of us who have vowels, or even Y, which is sometimes a vowel, at the end of our names, we get this. We understand the concept here. There will be somebody. The players will want to know. The coaching staff will want to tell them during the game. And one game will inevitably, I think, impact how the other one goes.
100%. It'll just be happening. It'll be like a movie to them, and you can't separate it from anything else. It's just going to be tricky, difficult, as the great Dale Johnson just showed. And of course, as Gab said, make sure to check out all the content on ESPN FC. Let's move it here, Kay, though, to Lionel Messi. We've got to give him credit here because, you know, the first 45, he was feeling a little congested. His goal, he found that needle in the thread. I mean, can he carry them, do you think, all the way now? Because you said that this might be the turning point for Argentina. Who are we to deny Messi and the greatness? But is this also a turning point for him? It's a weird thing for me to say, but is he upping his game now, moving on from here?
Yeah, just because obviously we're judging everything by that first game. And he was looking stressed as well before that moment happened for him. And then suddenly I do think that it will have just clicked it into place for him, for Lionel Messi. And we've been saying before this tournament, and I don't just want to go quickly back to Messi Dependencia, but we have been saying before this tournament that this is a team that are capable. This is a team that suddenly doesn't rely solely on Messi, that he does have the supporting cast around him that he needs now. It's going to take more than one win as well to convince us that they are as believable as the bookies would have had them going into it, and they are as believable as that run they've been on. But I really do genuinely feel that this could be a turning point for them. What about you, Gab?
I mean, as far as Messi specifically is concerned, you know, I think we've all been around enough kind of top athletes and people like Messi that, you know, when they suffer a setback, they just get right back up and go again, right? You kind of have to be that way. The only time it feels like, and this applies to Cristiano too, lest all the Cristiano fans get it, but I think it applies even to, you know, the reserve right back on a second division team in Peru. If you're at that level, you cannot.
That's my cousin, by the way.
Exactly. Exactly. Juan Jose Tegaray, yeah. You can't let setbacks affect you. And I refuse to believe that a Messi or a Cristiano at this level of their career, especially in World Cup.
Yeah.
He knows he had a rough game the first time around. I don't think this goal is necessarily going to affect him one way or the other. It might mess a little bit because players are superstitious. It might mess a little bit with some of his teammates' minds, some of the opponents' mind. But as far as Messi, I think it's the same Messi. But you raise a good point about the Messi dependencia. You know, I was having this conversation with Jules, and he says, like, well, they miss Lo Celso. And I'm like, dude, come on. I mean, unless you're Lo Celso's family, how are you going to miss him? Right? But it kind of makes sense because – If you go as we saw in the first game, where it was, you know, more of a straight 4-3-3 relative to this one, right? Take Messi out. If you just make Messi sort of the ghost in your machine, you're going to want to get service to Lautaro, right? And we saw kind of how easily the high line disrupted that for Saudi Arabia. We saw how there was a lack of creativity from the midfield. And my man Rodrigo de Paul, who today ran himself into the ground, but, you know, I think – somebody tweeted, I think it was Rory Smith, and says, like, you know, it was something like Rodrigo de Paul's been, his passing has been fantastic, mainly to the Mexicans. And it was kind of that sort of game for him, right? He sacrificed himself defensively and whatever else, but it just wasn't happening for him. And so if you're not going to be able to create with patterns of play, and I think it's more difficult to create with patterns of play as well. If you look at, you know, if he sticks, I'm not the biggest Tagliafico fan because he's so little, but you know, if you have Acuña in there instead of Tagliafico, inevitably your patterns of play, your service coming from the wings is going to be different. And so then it becomes more of a Messi-dependent team, which it really wasn't under Scaloni. And again, it might have been different if somebody like Nico Gonzalez, right? If he had been here, just his ability to go and stretch. I'm not saying he's better than Di Maria or whatever, but his ability to just stretch to give you something different. I'll be really curious to see what he does with the rest of his strikers, because we know Lautaro always plays, but I think he's got to think, all right, you know, is it Alvarez?
I think he's learning.
You know,
I think Scaloni's learning, Gab. I think Scaloni, like to your point about the subs, I think he's beginning to learn. And like you said, there was no Messi dependencia in the qualifiers. In fact, it was getting better and better. And we've talked a lot about Lautaro Martinez and how he's actually the most productive player for Lionel Scaloni during the qualifiers. Obviously, the World Cup is different. Obviously, playing against outside South American competition is different. But you began to see an Argentina without depending so much on Messi. I think today, step by step, you also saw that. However, let's see what happens in the knockout stages, because that's a totally different World Cup.
Yeah, and let's see who gets to the knockout stages as well. Mm-hmm. We want to bring up something from Casemiro, obviously, with a focus on Brazil and everything that's going on there at the moment. Neymar being out injured for these group games, obviously not good news at all. And for those thinking that everything is okay, I mean, here's a look at his foot. It's looking pretty swollen there. For those thinking everything's okay because there's so many great players in this Brazil side, Casemiro has just pretty much said, yeah, we know, but Neymar is our best player. So he's obviously always going to be a huge miss. What are your thoughts on this, Luis?
Well, I mean, you know, I've said it on Gab Show with Jules. I've said it here. I wrote about it, my first piece for ESPN. I've covered Brazil for a very long time. And there are facts, right? The fact is, this is the deepest Brazilian squad since, you know, I would say 2002. The fact is, Neymar is maybe, if people can disagree about, you know, their best or favorite, he's their most influential player. Neymar under Brazil is not Neymar under PSG. He's not Neymar under Barcelona or even Santos. He is a different player. The way that he utilizes, you know, everything that he has to his disposal in that Brazilian starting 11. Is he an absence? Is he a miss? Absolutely. Are Brazil going to top this group? Yes. Is it going to be a problem in the group? No. Is it a problem heading into the knockout stages? Of course, you want Neymar to be part of it. But I do believe they have enough. Right, Vinicius Junior on one side, to Rafinha, Anthony, Bruno Guimarães, who we haven't even spoken about. You know, there are players that can fit that, right? The question is, to me, actually, is more at the back. Danilo is also missing. That is a bigger question mark for me, because defensively, Brazil, they're good, they're solid, but it's definitely their most vulnerable side of things. So what do you do there? Do you put in, dare I say, Dani Alves in 2022 in a starting 11 for Brazil? Do you put in Militao? You know, those to me are bigger questions than Neymar missing out in the group stages, because Brazil will win this group and they will do well without Neymar in it. In the knockout stages, a different question. But I'm not, you know, yes, I'm worried. I want to see Neymar, but I'm more worried what's going to happen at the back.
Gab, was that a look away in disgust at the mention of Dani Alves?
No,
I should hope not.
But I don't think Dani Alves is a 90-minute right back.
Exactly.
In the World Cup at this stage, I think it probably will be Eder Militao. Having watched them against Serbia, that back four, they basically sit the whole time, which is fine because you got so many players going forward. But for me, going back to Neymar, and I wonder, how do you replace him? You know, who do you choose? Yeah, you can rattle off. You've got a lot of great players. But part of me wonders, the temptation will be there because he's played in that position before at club level. You move the packet up into Neymar's role behind the striker.
He means Lucas Paqueta, everybody, Paqueta. By the way. I love the nickname. I just want to add some context.
but listen, this adds to what Casemiro was saying, because he says we have other players that have been performing at the same level, like Vinny Jr., Rafinha, Richarlison, Gabriel Jesus. We, those who play in the back end, often joke that we feel sorry for our rivals because we can replace Rafinha for Anthony, Richarlison for Gabriel Jesus. We have Rodrigo, Gabriel Martinelli. We have a wide array of options on the bench. It's great for us, but it doesn't change the fact that Neymar is our best player. So he's actually using it to explain who Neymar is. But then some are saying, is it disrespectful to say that you feel sorry for your rival, or is he just being completely honest?
He's just being honest. It's Brazil. I would be so terrified if I saw this Brazilian side. He's right. And I like the idea of Paqueta moving, pushing up more, that Gab said. You have two options, I think, if you're Chiche. God forbid me tell Chiche what to do. But I feel like you could also, and I've heard Gab say this in the past, you could double pivot. You could bring in Fred. You could put Fred and Casemiro as a double pivot and then allow the packet to just move up. Or to your point, Kaymari, which is what Casemiro said, Gabriel Jesus could also be part of this, Rodrigo. So there are options. And I think Casemiro's right. We miss Neymar. He's our best player. We're good to go. I feel sorry for our opponents because we have so many options. It's fine.
I think a lot of it's going to depend on the opponent. Mm. Part of the issue with the packet further being deployed further forward is obviously, you saw this in the Serbia game, when he was further back, he's got passing lanes, he can look up, he's got Casemiro covering for him, it's just more time. If he plays further forward, if he plays in the Neymar role, he's going to have somebody up his backside straight away, he's going to have to play a lot on the half turn. He can do that, but he's also not the most dynamic player out there. So So I've been going back and forth on what you do. I love the idea of Bruno Guimarães, and maybe you just go straight 4-3-3. Or otherwise, if you're going to play somebody with Richarlison, and let's remember, Richarlison can play center forward. He's not a genuine center forward. He's not a traditional center forward. Maybe you play Rodrigo through the
middle. No, correct, Gab. In fact, I'll just remind everybody, in June, I know it was a friendly, but in June, Brazil destroyed South Korea 5-1. It was 4-4-2. So, you know, I get it. Like, Neymar's important. And by the way, Brazil won Copa America in 2019 without Neymar. I know it's very important, but in the group stages, I'm not worried for Brazil.
This is teacher Miguel Echegaray speaking. Who knows this Brazil side inside out. Gab, I wonder if you saw the FIFA, seeing as though you're big friends with FIFA and you're getting calls and texts from them. This FIFA panel calling Cristiano Ronaldo a genius in that controversial penalty that was won for Portugal in the 3-2 win over Ghana. According to FIFA's expert World Cup analyst in a briefing on Saturday. Do you know anything about this, or would you like me to tell you more?
So, first of all, it's really funny because whenever anybody who's at the World Cup, at the FIFA World Cup, does something good, we mention their name because it's an individual. Whenever it's somebody doing something bad, it's FIFA, the evil, toxic organization, right? No, seriously, going back to 2010, even though like most of these guys weren't there in 2010. So I believe this gentleman actually is somebody I think we should all treat him with a bit of respect. Because this gentleman who said this is, if I'm not mistaken, correct me, Luis or Kay, since you have it, it's Farid Mondragon.
It was Mondragon.
Legendary Colombian goalkeeper, came back, tried to play in a World Cup when he was mid-40s, if I'm not mistaken, you know, almost as iconic as Egypt's El Hadary. So look, he's talking about people winning penalties. He's a goalkeeper. He views it from the goalkeeper's perspective, and it's kind of like a frenemy thing, right? You don't want to see your opposing, you don't need to see your defenders, your boys, right? Your offensive line to your Tom Brady. Can't believe you just compared Mondragon to Tom Brady.
I know. I will never, ever, ever hear that comparison ever again. Thank you, Gab Barcotti.
No, I'm sure Mondragon doesn't deflate balls or eat weird avocado stuff. And he can probably do even better than Giselle, actually, because he's a very handsome man. And much cooler than Tom Brady, too. Anyway, back into the present. So I think he's sticking up for his defenders. And so his idea, look, that penalty, did Ronaldo go looking for it? Did he win it? Did he draw the foul? Yeah, that's what he's talking to. Let's not turn this into, ooh, the man's Colombian, so, you know, he must know the dark arts and, you know, and admire people cheating and winning penalties, right?
Yeah, he did say maybe the strikers are getting smarter. If you look at the penalty that Ronaldo got, people can say what they want about this man, but the smartness and the ingenious thought to just being patient and wait for that split second to touch the ball first before you and continue my leg so that your contact will hit my leg. That is total genius. And one more thing that I'll add, if your player on your national team is doing the same and getting a penalty for your national team, you're not complaining half as much. You're saying, okay, we'll take it.
Yeah, it's true.
100%. Yeah, and I'm sorry if I'm going to rant about something that was not on the script, but I was at the Iran-Wales game. And some people make comments, as you probably know, about the Iranian players and gamesmanship and stuff like that. So Nico Williams, who I'm pretty sure is not Iranian. I believe he's a Scouser, actually. I saw him do something, which Luis is going to approve of, I'm sure. So he got clattered. He got injured by the sidelines. And he collapses in a heap. And I think it was probably a legit foul. And it was just beyond the sidelines. So he's off the field of play. Ball goes the other way. He's down there. He's asking for treatment. He's asking for help. Help starts going towards him. What does he do? He kind of crawls back across the line onto the field of play so that the referee has to stop play. Now, this isn't illegal. This is somebody being clever. I mean, Farid Mondragon should go and examine that. I don't know if Nico Williams is a genius, but this is somebody doing it. Just like, you know, oh, look, you know, Mark Ogden sitting next to me says, oh, look, you know, clever Scouser doing that. I'm like, all right, fair enough, you know. But yeah, it's these little things that can make a difference.
Treachery is always going to be an art.
Wow, absolutely. Some amazing rants today from Gab, haven't we? Colin Firth, King's
Speech.
Now this. Nico Williams and Ronaldo being mentioned in the same breath. Wonderful day. And absolutely, when we do talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously it's going to be a brilliant window, sales window, shall we say, although probably not quite the Black Friday prices that they'd be hoping for this World Cup, as to who might be his replacements. And two names that we're seeing right now on one of our reports is Cody Gakpo and Rafael Leao to Manchester United. Do you know anything more about this, Gab?
Well, I can tell you more specifically about Cody Gakpo and Rafael Leao.
About these rumors that these are the targets for Manchester United.
Is your FIFA guy also Cody Gakpo, guys, basically what we're asking?
Are you and Banca like that? Cody Gakpo's been on telling you some info. Do you have any Milanisti friends telling you, oh, yeah, I know what's going to go down with Rafael
Leao? No, no, I can tell you about both of them. I mean, Cody Gakpo was obviously on the block in the summer. The asking price was very high. I think PSV felt that, well, he's on fire. It's not going to go any lower. There's a dearth of, you know, as long as he stays fit, you know, we're going to stick with him because there is a dearth of center forwards of his age profile who, you know, is he 23, 24 now, who, you know, have that size and athleticism, and he's putting up big numbers as well. Rafael Leao, to me, is a very different profile than Cody Gakpo. His situation's a little bit different. He has a contract that's expiring in 18 months. Milan quoted 100 million euros for him in the summer. They had inquiries from many clubs, including Chelsea, actually. But, you know, ultimately, he ended up staying put. He's got another thing hanging over him, which, of course, is this extraordinary story of when he was at Sporting Lisbon, a bunch of players rescinded their contract with the club because there was this whole thing where club ultras came in, started beating everybody up, and so they were allowed to leave on free transfers. Since then, Sporting Lisbon has taken the case to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and he said, you got to pay up. You got to pay us 60 million. Now, I'm pretty sure Rafael Leao does not have 60 million euros in his bank account. In fact, very few footballers do after tax. So there's going to be this whole question of he moved from Sporting Lisbon on a free to Lille, and then Lille sold them to Milan, I think, for 20 or 25 million. So the question is, who's going to come together and pay this? My guess is it's going to end up needing to be his new club. So that could drive his... that could end up driving his price even higher. So it's a complicated situation. But Rafael Leao's future may be at center forward. I think right now, I still think he's most effective coming in from a wide area. Cody Gakpo, bigger. I mean, Cody Gakpo's a big unit. Rafael Leao's not small, but Cody Gakpo, as we saw in that game against Senegal, you know, big, long neck, big head, gets in there, has more of that physicality. So I don't know if that answers your question, but there's no question, I think, with Ronaldo going, given that Martial seemed to be injured all the time, and Rashford, you're still, you know, not quite sure if he's fully regained his mojo.
There's a lot of money's been freed up. Yeah, and wages. Let's throw it ahead, Joey, then. LME, Germany. What would you think about them being the first big name to fall in this World Cup? Or can they turn things around like Argentina did?
It's tricky because I've had my doubts over Germany. Listen, they're talented and they have a plethora of players, whether it's the Bundesliga or anywhere else that can create some magic. I do worry sometimes when a first-time manager at a World Cup in Hansi Flick can do, he's obviously so talented and he can do things, but Japan exposed a few things about Germany that I think we knew for a while already. This is not your grandparents, you know, uncles, or even your older cousins, Germany from previous World Cups. This is a team that is still a little vulnerable at the back. When I saw that back four, you know, they can allow you to play. And now they're going to play a Spanish side. Yes, a deceiving scoreline against Costa Rica, because they are definitely the worst team in this tournament, going through their own transitional issues. But Spain obviously can play. They can find the space. They know how to penetrate. So Germany has to be at it. So it's not a terrible gamble to say that Germany might struggle. I'm expecting a technically savvy game, but one that I think Spain ultimately will win. That's not to say that Germany isn't a good team, but they are in their own transition of their own. I see Spain winning that one.
Are you fear for them, Gab? Germany?
Well, am I going to fear for Germany? Am I going to feel sorry if Germany get knocked out? What
are you getting that shirt, Gab?
That Italian German shirt that we're getting you made?
No, but you know, the reality is if Japan beat Costa Rica earlier in the day,
which will happen,
which is entirely, you know, entirely feasible. If LME is right, if Germany lose to Spain, they're out of the World Cup after two games. Now, I don't believe that can happen. It doesn't happen in my universe, the one composed of three dimensions. I can't think and I can't conceive of something like that. Germany out of the World Cup after 180 minutes. So
I think it's even if they just don't beat them, right? If Japan win, then Germany would bet if they don't beat Spain in the last game. So like it would have to be.
Even if it's a draw, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they have to win. Yeah. No. So I can't conceive that.
You think that Germany's winning this game?
I'll tell you another reason why. And look,
I'll tell you why. Go on then.
I'm a huge fan of Luis Enrique. One of the people I admire most in football, Franco Baldini, said Luis Enrique is the man that everybody would want to be if they were a man, but don't have the courage to say that they want to be Luis Enrique, right? I mean, he's a genius.
So cool. Well,
I want to be however, in Colin Firth, but go ahead.
No, enough with the Colin Firth. Luis Enrique is much
enough with that.
Anyway, I agree with your point. Luis Enrique is fantastic. Go ahead.
That said, and we love how Spain play and free-flowing and whatever, and Gavi's a genius, but man, think back to the Euros.
Yeah.
How many of those games in the Euros did they actually stuff the opposition? I would say the Italy game, no doubt. And they probably deserve to beat Italy, although we know how that one turned out. But so many of these other games. And I think, I don't know if he's trying to be too clever or whatever. I go back to the lineup that he puts out. Like, you don't have to play old Busquets in midfield. You don't have to play. It's possible that you see something that nobody else does, and that's fine. But, you know, you have old Azpilicueta who can't get a game for Chelsea. You know, you have Jordi Alba on his way out at Barcelona. Is there
he doesn't care, Gab. He doesn't care what any Spanish player does for their club. He's going to start Sergio Busquets until Busquets can't even walk, my friend. It's going to happen.
I love it when you do stuff that's counterintuitive and so on. And you're a genius as long as you get it right. And my only thing is with him, and we saw this at the Euros as well, there were so many games, and look, they look so clever and whatever, and then this one can't finish, and that one falls over, and then it comes down to when you need penalty kicks against Switzerland, or even in the group stage when they kept dropping points. Now, Germany can punish that.
They just need to pretend they're buying in their heads and that it's Barcelona that they're playing in their heads and things might be okay.
Yeah, and then maybe they go and they win 8-2 or whatever the scoreline was. You know, like, Germany are not – I'm just thinking of the physical mismatches, right? Because he's like, oh, look, I'm clever. Yeah, fine. And then, you know, what if he does something crazy like start Eric Garcia and then Sula comes and starts – there's so many things that can go wrong for Spain.
And the only thing that I'll just echo Gab here, Kay, is that support Gab's argument is that Costa Rica game was very deceiving. We pretty much learned nothing aside from the fact that Spain obviously loves to keep
right.
the ball.
But so also to say, though, Gab, you're saying how many teams did they have a blowout against in the Euros, but what did they still manage to do?
Win.
That's the other way of looking at it as well. They still managed to get to where they did. When nobody expected them to, they just seem to have.
So what do you have, Kay, in this game?
I don't know.
You got to give. So Gab thinks it's a Germany win, yes?
What? Well, it has. Well,
it has to be, right?
No, but
you know the order.
I know it has to be, but is that what you predict? A Germany win? Silence.
I don't.
What do you have? A draw?
Even though I've got Spain and Germany going through, I think Spain are going to win this game.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, then Germany aren't going through.
I know.
That's why. Because I didn't expect it to go this way in the opening.
Yeah, which again, Well, it's going to be interesting. That's for sure.
We'll see who's right, because we definitely weren't right with our predictions on this Argentina-Mexico game, were we? Canada, are in action again. They might be the darlings so far of the group stage, it has to be said. But we'll be back tomorrow after the Belgium-Morocco game, and then after the big one, Spain against Germany. So thanks so much for being with us on ESPN FC Daily. We'll see you again tomorrow. We'll find out who's right as well about Spain-Germany.